listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have special singer-songwriter Sam Williams with us. How are you?
I'm doing pretty, doing all right, man. Thanks for having me on. And by the way, it's Sam L. Williams. That's my artist name. So just remember, there's a guy who's the great grandson of Hank Williams Sr. He's a country guy. He's big. His name's Sam Williams. So I go by Sam L. Williams, just to differentiate between myself and him.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. What's the L stand for? What's your middle name?
Well, it's a funny story about that, man. So my full name is Samuel L. Thomas Williams, and my parents told me that the L could stand for whatever I want. And when I was getting ready to release music again, after having not released anything in a long time, I decided I wanted to change my artist name because I didn't want to go by Sam Williams, because I didn't want to compete with the other big Sam Williams guy out there who has the same name as I do, you know, because my full name is Samuel L. Thomas Williams. So I didn't want to go by Sam Williams to compete with him. So I got the shirt right here. This is my Sam L. Williams merch. And my brother-in-law actually suggested I go by Sam L. Williams because of this merch they have right here, the L in there. And it goes with my name. Because it's my full name is Samuel L. Thomas Williams. So, yeah. So I go by Sam L. Williams. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. And
yeah,
what was the moment of Zen that made you kind of want to be a musician or a songwriter? Do you remember the song that you heard that made you kind of fall?
You know, I was, you know, before I started writing songs, I was raised on some of the greatest music ever written, recorded in the history of popular music. I'm talking about the vintage rock and roll era. Not necessarily the classic rock, the Lynyrd Skynyrd, Led Zeppelin, Allman Brothers. I'm talking like oldies. I'm talking about late 50s, rock and roll, all the way into the early 60s, the Brill Building music, the British Invasion, all that stuff, Motown. I was raised on all of that. And, at the time, I wasn't 100% into music. I had a whole nother side interest that I had. But once I realized I had a natural gift and a talent and ability to write songs, and when I was in high school and play musical instruments in time and sing on pitch, that's why I decided I got to do this for the rest of my life. This is it, And basically, before I was writing songs, I was a fan of this music first because I fell in love with all the great music of the 60s, in late 50s, too, mostly 60s. And, that's where I went to school to learn how to arrange and how to produce and how to write, was from listening to that music first. And then I started writing when I was in high school. So, yeah.
And did you start with guitar? Did you start with another instrument?
I actually started with bass. Bass was the first instrument I learned how to play, man. I learned how to play bass when I was in middle school. And, I think a little bit elementary school too. I started with bass and then guitar, when I was in freshman year, and then piano and drums later, a little later on in high school. But I started with bass, man. In fact, just before I was writing songs, I was learning how to play James Jamerson bass lines, and learning how to play stuff. And so I became a really good bass player first and pretty solid rhythm guitar player. And then I started writing songs and it was basically around junior year of high school is when I started to write. So, yeah.
Did you start with a 60s style bass? What did you learn on?
Oh, I can actually show you the bass that I have. Hold on one second. I'm going to show you the bass that I have that is basically, check this out, man. I've only had one bass for my entire life, and this is it.
That's awesome.
This is a one of a kind bass. This is a Squire P bass, but I had flats put on it. I had these little metal bridge and pickup covers on it, and I, you know, recently added the foam to it, and I had this little tug bar too. But yeah, that's my workhorse, man. You know, I, as far as musical instruments is concerned, I'm probably technically the best at playing bass. Not a piano player. I mean, I can definitely play rhythm guitar. Not a lead guitar player, but I can definitely shred on bass. And it's my first love when it came to music, man. It was just bass. You know,
that's awesome. That's awesome. And who was the first person to put a bass in your hands? Was it a music teacher or was it?
It was mostly me. I mean, you know, like I said, man, I started as a fan of this music, and you know, I was a fan first of this stuff. I was listening to oldies radio when I was a kid growing up, listening to Kerry 101 when I was a kid, and then I started, and then I decided, you know, let me try, you know, the music thing and see if it works out. And then I started an upright bass. It didn't last very long. And I took up that electric bass. And when I figured out I was a really good bass player, I thought, shit, this is great. You know, I have a natural talent and gift and ability for this. You know, so yeah. So that's when I decided, like, this is it. You know, so yeah, man.
Did you say James Jamerson was your favorite bassist?
Well, when I started getting schooled into rock and roll history, and I started learning about studio musicians. In the 60s, when I learned about, you know, who were the session players in Memphis, Nashville, New York, Detroit, LA, you know, and other places, you know, I my first love as a bass player was James Jamerson, but then I grew to love other bass players who were playing other records at the time, you know, just from doing my own research about this stuff, you know. So
that's awesome. That's super awesome.
Yeah, man.
It's like, I feel like bass is the most important instrument in a band because it's the only one that's rhythm and pulse, you know what I mean?
Definitely. And also, but mostly, you know, when I play bass, I'm not thinking about trying to write something. I'm just thinking more of just like a jam instrument, just to practice, just to get my chops up. But when I'm on the piano, on the other hand, I'm trying to write a fucking song.
Right.
And same with the guitar. Like, I'm literally trying to create when I pick up those instruments. Like, I'm, you know, but when I'm on the bass, I'm jamming. You know, that's it. Like, when I'm, especially same thing when I'm playing drums. Playing drums and just playing other songs, playing bass, I'm trying to learn other people's songs. But when I definitely pick up the guitar and the piano, you know, or either one of those instruments, I'm trying to write something, you know, I'm literally trying to create, you know.
That's awesome. Do you play with a pick or do you play with your fingers?
I play both, actually. I've done both pick and fingers, you know, so.
Yeah, it's funny. I play a little bass and I use my thumb a lot. Like, you know, I've used the pick, but I don't love the pick, but I use my thumb as kind of like a Wes Montgomery thing with bass because I like the response.
I'm more of a fingers guy, but I mainly play bass now when I'm recording one of my original songs.
Right.
And depending on what style of music I'm writing, within what genre I'm writing this song in, you know, I you know, that's when I decided whether or not I want to use pick or fingers, you know. So
yeah, the hard thing for me is the muting of, you know, the string. That's like a whole other science, you know.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely, man. Yeah,
that's where it's like I'm like I can stick to guitar and piano, but bass when I need to play it, I know I can, you know, whip it out and start throwing down.
Yeah,
some
definitely.
But absolutely. I won't ever like take a gig where I'm like, yeah, I'll be your bass player. I'm like, no. There's so many great bass players.
I hear you, man. Definitely. I feel the same way about lead guitar. I can't play lead guitar to save my own life. I'm a rhythm guy. I can do chords for sure. In fact, I learned how to play without a capo, so I know how to play some pretty fancy chords on guitar.
That's cool.
But, you know, but I'm not a lead guy whatsoever. And like I said, when I play those instruments, I'm trying to write mostly, you know, guitar and piano. So.
Let's talk a little bit about your creative process. Like, do you start with a lyric? Do you start with chords?
Well, to be honest with you, man, a lot of the songs I've written, you know, a lot of it is like I have the life experience with either someone or something, and then the lyrics just come. You know, I have the life experience, and then I whip out the notes app on my phone, and I just lyrical vomit a bunch of lyrics,
right.
And then I go to the piano and the guitar almost immediately. And I start playing chords and I start singing a melody to go along with the lyrics I've written. But most of the time, I would say the easiest songs I've ever written were the ones where I was inspired by someone or something in my life. And that, and you know, I had felt that inspiration, that sort of like that sort of kick in the butt, you know, if you know what I mean, just sort of that jolt of, you know, lightning, sort of that inspiration that happens when I have that experience with someone or something. And then I write the lyrics, I write the whole song lyrically, front to back, verses, choruses, pre-choruses, bridge, the whole thing. And then I sit down at the piano and, you know, and I start coming up with the music. I pick a key that I haven't written in a song in a while. And then, I mean, I know my theory pretty well, so I know my way around all 12 keys, and I know, you know, all the different tricks of the trade when it comes to coming up with different chord progressions, you know, so it just comes really naturally to me, you know. So
that's awesome. And do you produce all your own stuff? Do you record your
own
stuff?
Yeah. So I produce all my own demos, man. I produce all the demos that I do, you know, and the last EP that I recorded was done at a professional studio. I produced those songs, but I didn't engineer them. I had someone else be the engineer. I used their studio. I used their equipment, and they brought in a lot of their musicians to play on the songs. But you know, I produce everything, man. I'm the captain of the ship. You know, I mean, that's so important. After I write a song, is figuring out what the arrangement is going to sound like, what everything is going to sound like with all the different instruments, you know, going on at the same time. And that's one of the funnest parts about the creative process when it comes to music is arranging. It's just coming up with all the different parts, all the different instruments. You know, I love that, you know? So, but seriously, I'm the captain of the ship. I know exactly what I want when I'm in the studio. It's like, boom, you know, I try to have a vision for each song that I write. When I produce, I try to know exactly, try to vision for what the songs are sound like, but the full instrumentation, you know? So yeah, man.
Cool. Well, I'm going to let my station owner and engineer, Sam, choose the first song, and we're going to talk about it, all right? So this is going to be a blind, random choice of one of your songs.
Okay.
Anyway, here we go.
She would give me an opportunity. The say comes when you don't expect it at all. Well, I guess that's true, cause I didn't see this coming at all. But now that I know that she wants me, I'm as happy as a man could be, cause I sure am.
awesome. Tell me the inspiration behind that song.
Oh, man. It's kind of a crazy story. But one thing I'll say about this is that it's the thing is about possibility is that it's 100% a true story. None of the lyrics in the song are fabricated. None of it is sort of like one of those songs where it's like I'm exaggerating some of the details or like, you know, it's a true story. It is written about somebody specific, and it is about a specific situation that I went through about 3 years ago. And, you know, it's the best way to describe the song to you. If I had to do it in like one sentence, it's a song about the one that got away. And there's something to be said about that because, you know, when it comes to like, you know, especially pop and rock and roll songs and R&B soul songs, there's a million love songs out there about getting together with a girl and like everything works out, everything's cool. And then there's a million breakup songs. There's probably even more breakup songs out there where it's like, you know, it's like the relationship ends and it's a tragic ending and then things change and then, you know, it doesn't work out. And then you're trying to move on, you're trying to get to the next person. But this song isn't one of those songs. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit more painful because this is one of those songs. It's about the one that got away because this is about someone I could have had but didn't get. You know, it's a little different than a lot of other breakup songs because, you know, a breakup song, it's like you get the person and then you lose them. So it's a change. It's an awkward change. But this song is basically it's about someone I could have had but never got. And that's the thing, you know, and there's a whole story behind why it didn't work out and like what happened that caused this situation to not work out in my favor. But, you know, but basically gave you the gist of it. It's literally about the one that got away. And there's not enough songs out there about that, frankly, because there's more breakup songs and love songs as more people experience wins than loses. But this is about something different because I don't think this is sort of a universal thing everybody goes through because, you know, it's about someone you could have had but didn't get, you know. So this is sort of, but that's basically what that song is about, you know. So
that's awesome. And then did you play the bass on that one or no?
Oh, hell yeah, man. I played the bass. I played the piano. You know, I came up with that riff and it's so crazy, man. Cool. I woke up with that riff in my brain and it's so crazy. I woke up with that riff in my brain and I forgot about it. It completely left my brain and then it came back. And then as soon as it came back, I put down my voice memo on my phone and recorded that riff, you know. Crazy. And I will say that the song was sort of written in real time. I had the riff and then I came up with the chords. And then the situation was happening that inspired me to write the song when I was writing it. So I came up with the lyrics to fit with that, to fit what I was, you know, the melody and chords I came up with on guitar, you know, in that riff. And then, you know, as the situation unfolded, that's when I finished the song because initially I had two bridges written for the song. It was sort of like the first bridge I wrote didn't make it into the final cut because it wasn't exactly it didn't match the details that were presenting themselves to me in the situation I wrote the song. So I wrote a different bridge to basically tell the true story of what actually happened, you know. But yeah, so basically that was one of the songs that I wrote the music first and then the lyrics, but then the situation was happening in real time when I wrote the music. So it just pretty much wrote itself. So yeah.
And I heard some bells. Was it a dulcimer that you played? Was it a...
So that's a marimba, actually. That's a marimba. Okay. So it's a marimba, and I played that on the MIDI keyboard, and that's, you know, cool. I and the saxophone solo I play on the MIDI keyboard too, but I just had a guy basically I played on the MIDI keyboard, and then they sent it to the saxophone player, and he copied exactly what I played on the MIDI keyboard. So that's my solo, note for note, pretty much.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. Must have been fun to hear your solo realized by a real saxophonist, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was really cool. Yeah, I mean, I just punched that in MIDI and Logic, and then they sent the MIDI part to the saxophone player, and he just played exactly what I played on punched in Logic on the MIDI keyboard. So yeah, man,
that's cool. That's cool. So do you kind of like to construct everything, or are you kind of open to other players adding their kind of special sauce to what they do?
Well, Turquoise Apricot, you know, that song, you know, I know if you heard it, but that all those guitar solos, you know, he made those up. He just knew the key that the song, the chords, the song, and he just made up those solos. So yeah, I mean, I'm open to it, but for the most part, like if I have specific parts that I want musicians to play, I'm like, play this part, you know, because like I said, I'm like the captain of the ship in the studio, man. I know exactly what I want, you know. So yeah, man.
That's awesome. Yeah, and who do you think you draw your inspiration from the most? Like,
For songwriting, definitely the Brill Building, 100%. So like Jerry Goffin, Carole King, Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, Burt Bacharach and Hal David, Jimmy Webb, Brian Wilson, like 100%. The Brill Building, and also the West Coast too, like Brian Wilson, Jimmy Webb, guys like that, you know. Like
I met Burt Bacharach when I was in a session.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was pretty crazy. I was in a mastering session, and mastering engineer at the time was like, "Hey, I've got a client coming in, so do you mind if we just take like a 5-minute break?" I said, "No problem." And then in walks Burt Bacharach, and that was his client. That was So like I went and I was like, "Hey man, great to meet you." And then I went to my car and I was listening to references of the master. And then one of the studio technicians came in, said he knocked on my door and he said, "Hey, Burt Bacharach wants to see you." And I was like, "Oh my God, did I mess something up?" So I walked back in and he's like, "Hey, I just wanted to thank you for letting me crash your session." And I said, "You're Burt Bacharach. Like, of course you can crash any of my sessions, you know?" And he was so cool. And I just thought that was such a classy move that he did that, because
I'm a lot like Burt Bacharach in many ways, because one, I'm a huge fan of harmony. I love chord progressions. I love, doing unique, interesting, unexpected chord changes. I love coming up with stuff like that. And like I said, you know, Burt is a lot like me, because when Burt was in the studio, man, he was a captain of the ship. He did things his way. He did not let the musicians improvise or come up with their own parts. He was like, you know what? I'm going to write out parts for the musicians. They're going to play them exactly how I would write them, how he wrote them, you know? So, and he would show guys what to do, man, in the studio. You know, he really was the captain of the ship. You know, it was like you did things his way in the studio for sure, man. Yeah.
And he was like always working, you know, like up until.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend that she's been my violinist on a couple tracks, and
is it Eliza James?
Yeah, Eliza James. Yeah, she was his touring musician for a long time.
I know her. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
she used to just rave about how sweet he was and how much he always wanted to work and play.
Definitely.
In his 90s and still doing it. You know, it's like,
yeah, I know, man. Absolutely, man. Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's play another song. I'm gonna let Sam choose the next one. So this is gonna be a blind test number two. Let's play it again, Sam. Play something else.
Turquoise,
Very cool. I like the shopping cart cam.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was really fun to make that music video. I had a really good time doing it, you know.
And you're wearing the same shirt. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. That's my merch, man. Sam L. Williams, baby. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So tell me what the concept behind the music video was.
So basically, man, it's funny thing about that music video. So there were two different shoots for that music video, and there's a reason for this being. Because there's two different versions of that song, man. And I've released both, actually. I recorded that song originally at my home studio I started recording it back in 2016. And I finished mixing and mastering it like during the pandemic. And, you know, my recording teacher had at the time actually mixed and mastered it for me. But then the thing is that, you know, when I was producing that demo, and when I was making that making that version of that song, I wasn't 100% happy with the results of the recording of that song. I felt like there were some timing issues with the production. You know, I wasn't 100% satisfied with it. So I really wanted to re-record that song and do a different version of it, but still the same song, just, you know. So I want to re-record it in a professional studio with like real equipment and like really and get it sounding right, you know, and not just like a home studio demo, you know. But basically, when it came time to doing that, when I was working with my vocal teacher and the guy and her husband who engineered and mixed, and, you know, that song, basically, when I was talking to her about re-recording that song, she was telling me, "Hey, Sam, since it's a psychedelic rock song, why don't you do like a long extended version of it?" And I'm like, "Yes, that's it. That's it. The reason why I wanted to, why that was such a brilliant idea is because it's in true forms the genre the song is in, man. Because, you know, back in those days, man, in the late 60s, and the, you know, with Doors and Strawberry Alarm Clock and all those psychedelic rock bands, like, you know, Vanilla Fudge, you know, a lot of times they had the long version for the album, and then right. and then the
radio edit, yeah,
the AM radio cut, the radio edit, exactly. So I thought to myself, that's perfect. We need to re-record that song and do a long extended version of it. And that was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, and when, so basically the long story short is that there's two different shoots, because the first shoot was to the old version of the song. And then I re-recorded it, and then we did a different shoot, and then we shot some additional footage, you know, for the music video, you know, to match up with the new version of the song that I recorded, you know. So,
and what's the significance of the group was
pretty everybody? Much. You know what, man? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's the funny thing about it. So, you know, the thing is about the song is that, you know, it's meant to, the lyrics are literally supposed to mean absolutely jack shit. They're supposed to be nonsensical. They're not supposed to make any sense. You know, I was, in fact, I've never done LSD or mushrooms. I was literally trying to get into the character of somebody who was doing LSD mushrooms. It was hallucinating that this girl, that girlfriend that he has, is a turquoise apricot, you know. So it was totally from my imagination, you know. Essentially the real truth about it is that I wanted to write a song, a psychedelic rock song, because I hadn't written a psychedelic rock song before, and it's a genre of 60s that I haven't covered yet. And so I thought to myself, well, why don't I write a song surrounding, I'll take a random exotic fruit and a random exotic color, and then basically write a song surrounding those two things. And that's how that song came to be. And that's when I started writing it. You know, that's when I came up with a story about him falling over the turquoise apricot and then cool. then finding an pomegranate. It's just like, again, it's like, you know, I'm on LSD, and LSD makes you hallucinate, you know? And yeah. So yeah, I'm pretending to be like that. I've never actually done those drugs. So yeah.
That's cool. And you made it psychedelic with all the water, light,
image. Yeah, and the woolly mammoth bass and the Farfisa organ, and the wild fuzz and wah-wah guitar effects, you know. I mean, and that's definitely not me playing lead guitar. I did not want to play, you know, I'm not a lead guitar player at all. So, you know, they brought in somebody to play that lead guitar. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And when did you write that song and like kind of?
Oh, man. So that's actually a really old song. I wrote that back in 2016. I wrote that just after I turned 21. So I wrote that song back like in 2016. And I started recording the original version that you can also stream, back then too. So it's, you know, that song goes back quite a ways for sure.
And do you ever play out? Do you perform these songs live?
Yeah. I mean, I've done a bunch of shows at Bar Lubitsch in West Hollywood, you know, and it's easy because I know the booker and he's booked me before, but I haven't played at a bunch of other places, to be honest with you. That's the main place I played at in recent years. But yeah, I've done those songs at Bar Lubitsch a bunch of times. You know, it's like a place I've played at a bunch before. So yeah.
Now, as a new artist, like what do you think is the atmosphere or the market with new artists and getting music out? Like, how do you feel about it? And what are the uphill battles and what are the, you know, joys about it?
Well, I think I think artificial intelligence might be an issue, but I feel like that because all the limitless possibilities you can do with artificial intelligence, and there's right. no real safeguards guardrails, you know, preventing, you know, that technology from going way out of hand. But I still feel like for now, as long as, you know, live music is around, people still want to, you know, hear music, you know, written and recorded by humans. And I feel like, you know, as long as shows and the movies and commercials are getting made, they're going to need music. And I feel like the sync marketplace is always going to need songs, and they're going to need all types of songs.
Right.
So I feel like the sync marketplace is always going to be a good place for musicians to make money, you know? So, yeah.
That's awesome. And do you usually kind of are you reading books that inspire you, or listening to artists that are kind of like?
Well, I listen to Sirius XM radio a lot. To be honest with you, I mostly listen to oldies radio these days. I listen to a channel called 60s Gold on Sirius XM radio. I mostly listen to oldies radio because that's what I love.
Right.
I love music from back then.
Right.
And but I also do a podcast too, man. You know, I've sat down and interviewed a lot of people who made that music back then. I've gotten the stories behind a lot of great music from back then. So I've had conversations with a lot of those people, and I'm a real like rock and roll music historian. And if it's new, it's mostly like throwback music. It's not like, just the sort of like, you know, it's not like Dua Lipa and stuff like that. It's just like, it's like throwback old school music, real organic stuff, you know, like, you know, music that could have been written and recorded back in the 60s.
There's not a lot of people your age that are obsessed with 60s music.
I know, man, there isn't. And it's a shame because it's some of the greatest fucking music ever written and recorded. And it's so good. And I really want younger people to go crazy about this stuff, because the generation that heard this music when it was new, they're on their way out, man, because they're boomers and they're starting to have health problems.
Yep.
It's so sad because this music was so good. It doesn't deserve to die. It really doesn't. It needs to be passed on next generation, man. And I truly believe that, you know, if people my age can like the Beatles and other, you know, they can like other stuff from that era too, besides the Beatles, you know, for sure.
Well, that's one of the reasons I did a bunch of Hendrix covers on my latest Blues Trio record, because he's like one of the greatest. And you know, a lot of people in this new generation, they don't really know his music or why he's so great. And to me,
I would agree, but there's also tons of other groups from that era a lot of people my age don't know about. You know, right. Like the Rascals, 11 Spoonful, Tommy James, yep. Sean Bells, the Turtles. A lot of people know about the Four Seasons, Frankie Valli, because of, you know, Jersey Boys. But, you know, but there's just tons of stuff from that era that my generation needs to be schooled on, for real.
Right.
You know, and they need it, and they also need to be schooled on the people who wrote these songs, where they were recorded.
Even like a songwriter like Donovan.
Like what kind of tape machines they were using, like who the studio musicians were, like who the arrangers were, you know, like all they need to be schooled on all of that. And when I'm doing my podcast, is that I'm getting these people on right now who are still alive, you know, to try to get, you know, younger people to be in it, to be not only in the stuff, but also be schooled on, you know, the history about it, you know. So, yeah, man.
What's like the most fascinating story you've heard while doing the podcast, like asking somebody something about a song or, you know, how it was recorded?
Well, I interviewed the guy who came up with the trumpet part in Sweet Caroline.
Oh, that's cool.
And he told me that he got the job by mistake because Neil Diamond's producer thought he arranged Can't Take My Eyes Off You, but he didn't. But he still got the job. And, he heard the track without the trumpet part, and he thought the song was kind of boring. So I thought, you know, why don't I do my job as an arranger and dress it up a little bit? So he came up with the trumpet. There were two trumpets and two trombones that he used because he thought the Bee Gees would be, you know, because the Bee Gees at the time were using that same combination of horns, you know, for their late 60s stuff. So that's why he decided to do that. And he brought in musicians to play on that, two trumpets and two trombones and the string section. And, you know, when he played what he was doing with the arrangement of the song, what he was recording with Neil Diamond, he asked Neil, said, "Hey, man, what do you think of this?" And Neil's like, "Well, I didn't hear anything I didn't like." He was pretty much neutral. He was like, he didn't hate it, he didn't love it. And then basically he left and he thought, "Man, did I screw up here? I thought I didn't do a good job." And then basically Neil never called him back. He never worked with him ever again.
Wow.
You know,
so, really?
Neil hasn't talked to Neil since 1969. So
wow, that's crazy, especially with like such an iconic part. I mean, everybody knows.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. My follow-up question to him was who the studio musicians he got to play on that. And that's, see, I'm not going to say that because the thing is that you won't find that information anywhere else on the internet because those guys never got credit. Those are uncredited studio musicians. And part that's of what great. I do in my podcast is I do a premium subscription feed for these interviews. And I ask these people these questions and I get this information out of them. And I want people to, you know, pay for it because it's just exclusive, hard to find information that you won't find anywhere else. For real.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So yeah, that's man. It. Yeah. So that's yeah.
Right. How long have you been doing the 60s podcast?
Well, I started doing it in 2018, but I've only been doing the premium subscription feed for the new interviews that I've been doing since 2022. It's only for the past couple of years. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, let's play something else. Well, I think we got another song in the fold. So
yeah.
Let's play this last one, and then we'll talk about it. Here comes.
Too much to-
Yeah.
What's the name of that song?
It's called Too Much to Drink, man. That's the name of it.
And tell me about the inspiration behind that. What made you
want that? Oh, man. So I was at this show, right? And I was at a friend of mine's show. And I saw this girl that I hadn't seen since before the pandemic. And the thing is that, you know, when you, oftentimes when you go to these like indie shows in LA, a lot of times it's a lot of small talk, a lot of, hey, how's it going? What are you up to? And then someone will say, nice, that's cool. And then you just have a bunch of, you know, just a lot of just pointless small talk, you know, a lot of times when you talk to these people. But, you know, the conversation I had with this girl, man, it was fucking out of this world. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was just like, it was so different than a lot of other conversations I'd have with other girls at bars. I mean, it was just insane because like she was doing like 80% of the talking and I was doing like 20%. And she was like, there was a lot of this, you know, touching going on because she was like, she was acting very submissive when I was talking to her. And like, you know, there was a lot of sexual conversation going on between us. And it was just crazy because I never had a conversation with a girl like this before at a bar. But the thing is that what happened was that during the conversation, I realized that she had a little too much to drink. And she was just, you know, and I realized that, you know what, you know, wouldn't be, I probably shouldn't go all the way with her. I should probably just not do that, you know, because I probably wouldn't be the best idea. Right. You know, I mean, even though she was just, the thing is that she also wasn't like completely shit-faced drunk. She was just a little tipsy. She wasn't like, and also it kind of seemed like, you know, when we're talking to each other, I've known this girl for like over 10 years. So, you know, I feel like, you know, she was sort of confessing my feelings to her and being the most honest with me because when she was a little bit drunk, because we've known each other for such a long time, right. You know? And yeah, so it's just that, it was just, that conversation was so euphoric and so just like, you know, just, you know, unlike any other conversation you have with any girl at a bar since, you know, at the time and since, you know, right. and it's just, I had to write a song about it, you know? So, yeah.
That's cool. You got something out of it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And what was the instrumentation that you kind of chose to kind of like, you know,
oh man, I was going full on Phil Spector, Wild Sound, you know, Brian Wilson, Beach Boys, Pet Sounds, but actually I borrowed a lot from Phil Spector, and particularly I was very much influenced by Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil, and the way they wrote their songs for like the Righteous Brothers, and yep. Same thing with Jerry Goffin and Carole King. I was pulling directly from those writers, you know, when, you know, Just Once in My Life and You've Lost a Loving Feeling were exact reference tracks for these songs. Because
did you know that Cher sang background vocals on that
yes,
song?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Crazy. I just found
yes,
that out.
She did. Yes, she did. Absolutely.
Her and
yes.
Darley Love. They were the background.
I interviewed a guy who played on You've Lost a Loving Feeling. His name's Don Peake. Yeah. He was a guitar player on that session. But yeah, man, I mean, that's exactly what I was going for. Everything from like the six string bass part, you know, to the Barry saxophone, to the marimba. I mean, everything was totally like Wall of Sound. It even has like the similar structure to like those Wall of Sound Righteous Brothers records. It's got the same like build up. It's got the same sort of length to the verses. It's got like, you know, it's even got that chord note triplet thing build up in the pre-chorus of bum bum bum. I mean, I totally got that from like, you know, Phil Spector, Barry Manson, the Wild Righteous Brothers records. You know, it's just that I totally got that from them. You know, the LA sort of Wrecking Crew sound of, you know, the Barry sax, you know, the organ, you know, everything, you know, it was totally, you know, that vibe for sure.
That's awesome. And you have some recording projects coming up, right? You're working
on
some-
so basically, I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign for my next EP. That's what I'm doing right now. I've been demoing new stuff out at home for a while. But I recently decided that I really don't want to release these demos. I mean, they sound pretty good, but after going in the pro studio and recording and not being an engineer, I thought to myself, I want to keep doing this. I much prefer this than releasing my home studio demos, you know, because I don't have like $1,000 equipment to be able to, you know, record stuff that even came even remotely close to stuff I just put out. So. But I'm crowdfunding for the next EP right now, and I'm demoing stuff out at home, and you know, I got performance video of those new songs, but I want to release one. And what I do is I want to re-record the songs in the studio I used before. And I'm raising money to go back in the studio and do that. And, you know, once I hit my goal, then.
You got to record the analog tape because that's how that's how they did it.
I know. I know. But, you know, I mean, you know, tape had, you know, had a lot of, you know, issues too. You know, it's just, it wasn't like all as cool as, you know, like cutting tape with a razor blade and doing all that was just, you know, a lot for those engineers back then, you know.
I've recorded the tape a couple times. I've never had to edit with the razor blade. I kind of try to just do it if we can.
Yeah, but a lot of engineers did have to do that back then.
I try to avoid it because I can't imagine that it's ever a good thing to cut tape. But I mean, that's you know what I mean. That's like part of the process. So it's about finding engineers that are good at it, but. I just never wanted to cut the tape. I'm like, no, that's too much because too much commitment into if somebody makes a mistake, then it's just.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah.
But you have to record analog tape. It is a special experience for sure. It brings out
those 65
now. Where can people find you if they want to find you online?
So Instagram and TikTok handle, iHeartOldies. Remember that. It's like iHeartRadio except with oldies in title. So iHeartOldies. That's Instagram and TikTok. Artist name, Sam L. Williams, Sam capital L dot Williams. If you just type in Sam LW, you'll find me right on Spotify. My podcast, it's called The Millennial Throwback Machine. I have two versions. I have a free version where I break down the 60 songs, analyze them, talk about the history behind them. And then the premium subscription version has all the new interview episodes that I'm doing where I'm bringing in these 60s music legends and getting their history behind these songs now while they're still alive, before it's too late, before they croak. And that's the Millennial Throwback Machine Premium. And, you know, that's, and I have a bunch of interviews that I'm releasing every month, you know, to that premium feed. And it's not that expensive. It's like a cup of coffee a month and you get a few months free. It's like $4.99 a month and you get a few months free. And you get access to all the new interview episodes I'm doing. And some of them have been in person. So you'll get to see some of them as well as hear, listen to them, you know, because most of the time they're over the phone. The free version has just, it's just me. That's all it is. Just me breaking down the songs, analyzing them. But Sam L. Williams, where you'll find all the music. I have two EPs out. And like I said, I'm crowdfunding for the next one. So, you know, I have a GoFundMe campaign set up now for that, you know, so I'm, you know,
Well, you're a busy man, Sam, and we're happy to have featured you on Wake Up Hollywood. Thanks so much for being a guest, and have a happy Thanksgiving, dude.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Same to you, man. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you letting me come on here, letting me share the stories behind my songs. I love talking about, you know, what inspired me to write the song, because I have a really good memory, as you can tell. And I love talking about, I'm always down to talk about 60s rock and roll history because I love that shit. You know, I love that music. It's really, it's amazing stuff, man. So I'm always down to talk about that and, you know, talk about my influences. And, you know, it's, I love sharing, you know, what inspired me to write the songs, because like I said, you know, I just remember, you know, I just have a very vivid memory of what inspired me to write those songs, you know. So,
well, right on. You got to keep that music fire glowing bright, man. And you know, on behalf of Sam, myself, and our other Sam, the station owner and engineer, have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you next week.
And there's my logo, Sam L. Williams.
That's right, you'll
find Sam L. Williams, man. Yep,
peace,
that's it.
Love, and hair grease.
Exactly, man.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.